This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
You might assume we're both good at presenting to a live audience because of this podcast. But at the end of the day, when we record, it really feels like we're just talking to one another. Presenting information in person in a formal setting to a large audience is something that still makes us really nervous. To prepare for a live speaking event we're hosting together, we turned to our masterclass subscription to not only refine our presentation skills, but to build our confidence in a different kind of public speaking capacity. Between Robin Roberts, Hillary Clinton, and Kevin Hart's expertise, our confidence skyrocketed. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass helps you actually do it. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors. So whether you want to master negotiate with Chris Voss, think like a boss with Martha Stewart, or plan your dream wedding with celebrity event planner Mindy Wise, Masterclass has you covered. There are over 200 classes to pick from, with new classes added every month, like our latest aha moments from Robin Roberts' Effective and Authentic Communication class that we watched before our event presentation. She taught us how to establish a genuine connection with the audience from the start. I'll always be a little nervous before presenting, but Masterclass prepared us in a way that dialed my nerves down and gave me tools to ground myself. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 50% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Welcome back to another episode of Shrink Chicks.
Take a seat on our virtual therapy couch and get ready to learn all about, well, you.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're both licensed marriage and family therapists and relationship experts. We're the owners and founders of The Therapy Group, a nationwide psychotherapy practice with down-to-earth therapists just like us.
Your session is starting, so get ready to know yourself and grow yourself.
Hi, Jen.
Hi, Em.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Living the dream, Betty.
My little sickie.
I know. I sound like shit. Not as if people don't hate my voice enough. Now it really sounds pretty bad. And we're so all going to do it, you know? This is sometimes how it rolls, okay? But wait, Hannah, amazing listener Hannah, we love you, Hannah, wrote in, what's your favorite 90s movie?
Okay, this is easy. Titanic. Easy. Thanks, Hannah.
I had the VHS tape.
And you just watched it nonstop.
The double.
Yes.
There was two of them.
I remember it. Yes.
Yep. Oh, God. It was so good. Yeah. I loved it.
I was about to say mine, and then I'm like, oh, mine might be early 2000s.
Oh, what was yours? I mean, you are a baby.
I am baby. I know. I was born in 89, so I am very... Okay. Wait.
I was going to say
Man of the House, which I love because I love Jonathan Taylor Thomas. You know that?
Yes.
Of course. I would say, you know, I love me. So I don't know.
Wow.
Maybe we should have a movie marathon.
What about like Homeward Bound? Great one.
Oh, my God. Great. Well, and Beethoven. One of my favorites. Yes. You know, well, my daughter. So we were talking recently. My daughter's obsessed with Matilda now.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
Obsessed with Matilda.
Great, great movie.
So the other day she was like, let's play that you're my dad and you don't like books. And I was like, do you want me to be Matilda's dad? She's like, yeah, let's play that. Pretend that you're a mean teacher.
And did
I'm like, you?
You
want me to be Miss Trunchbull?
Of course. Right, Trunchbull.
I'm like,
what did we say recently? We were talking about Miss Trunchbull.
I don't know, probably that we're dressed like her.
Yeah, maybe. Honestly, like she had some style.
Yeah, oversized crew neck and leggings.
Right. Like she knew what she was doing. She was way ahead of her time.
Yeah, right. Maybe she was misunderstood. Okay. But speaking of misunderstood, I don't fucking know how we're going to this. We're trying to talk about imposter syndrome. I feel like imposter syndrome has become very mainstream to talk about. So we want to sort of break it down and make it a little bit more specific.
Yeah.
So as you all know, we like to do this with therapeutic terms. So let's talk about it. Specifically, there's an amazing book people can read, which is The Secret Thoughts of Successful Women, Why
Capable people suffer from imposter syndrome and how to thrive in spite of it. Dr. Valerie Young, really great book if you want to read more of this, but she puts it very well into subgroups. So I thought I would talk a little bit about these subgroups to break it down. So as you're listening to this, try to think about yourself, like maybe which one would I fall into? So are you ready for them?
I'm so ready.
Okay. So she starts out with the perfectionist, which is perfectionists set excessively high goals for themselves. And when they fall to reach a goal, they experience major self-doubt and worry about measuring up, aka these are the ones that are control freaks. Okay. The next one is superhuman. Convince their phonies amongst their real deal colleagues. They often push themselves to work harder and harder to measure up, but this is just a false cover up for their insecurities, and the work overload may not only harm their own mental health, but also their relationships with others. Imposter workaholics are actually addicted to the validation that comes from working, not the work itself. The natural genius. These are the people that, like, you know, most things are pretty easy for them. They get it right the first time. So they judge their competence based on ease and speed as opposed to their efforts. In other words, if they take a long time to master something, they feel shame.
Wow.
The soloist. Sufferers who feel as though they're asking for help reveals their phoniness. If they can't do it on their own, they must be fake. And then the expert. Experts measure their competence based on a what and how much they know or can do, believing they will never know enough, and they fear being exposed as inexperienced or unknowledgeable. Oh. So just so you all know, if you check out this book, it has like the questions to ask yourself if you like relate to these, so it can tell you which one that you are. But Jen, just from reading that, from me, listening to me, which one do you think you relate to?
What was the like validation from work one?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Wait, which was the validation?
It was
work?
Like the third
yeah.
one.
Oh,
said.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the superhuman. And then it's the imposter workaholics.
Guilty.
It's that one for you, right?
Yeah. Does right? I mean.
Yeah. For me too. You know, what's funny is somebody wrote it and said, why do you think this is so common with new therapists?
Oh.
If therapists have to be able to acknowledge superhero complexes. You do not end up in this field unless you want to feel good about yourself. I'm sorry. It's just true. We are not these selfless, wonderful humans. It's nice if we help people too, but bullshit, this is selfless.
Right. I also think, you know, there is this sense after grad school when you're going into the field of, I need to know everything that I'm talking about in order to help someone. And the fact of the matter is, the field of psychotherapy is so vast and so gigantic that there is no way that you are going to know it. Years and years into the field, you're not going to know everything. And so the thing I think is really important to acknowledge for new therapists is that even if you don't know everything, you can still help people, right? Like you can still, and I think one of the most important things to have when you get out of grad school as a new therapist is the ability to acknowledge that you don't know everything, because it opens you up to learning and to looking at, well, are there other ways that I could view this? I can go to supervision. I can talk about, you know, how to look at this in different ways. And so that, I think our imposter syndrome at times leads us to having kind of this exterior wall to be able, and keeps us from reaching out to help for help of, you know, how would you do this differently? What does this look like for you? And I think you really need this level of humility and the ability to be humble when you're a new therapist, probably doing anything new. You know, we're just talking from experience. So that you can learn and you can grow.
So what do you think? Okay, so I think that's, you know, one of the reasons why we are, obviously we have a group practice, but we're big people that believe in group practices. Because
yes.
One of those is the collaboration and asking other people for help, which I feel like is something that sometimes therapists really suck at doing.
Yeah.
And I'm such a believer in, is that like, I do not know everything, right? Okay, so I have a supervisee. What did I do last week? A supervisee comes in with me or something and I say, you know what? I am not the best person to talk to this about, but I bet I can get Jen to. And you called her up and you guys work together, right?
Yeah.
And so I have to admit that I do not know everything, even though I am this like approved supervisor and this is what I do, whatever. it doesn't matter.
Right.
In that moment, the best person for that consult was you, not me.
100%. And vice versa, right?
Yeah.
That happens all the time too, where I'll be like, listen, this isn't my area of expertise. We do that with supervision. We also do that in business. Like if someone's coming to us with like a business question, if there's something that like you are more rooted in, I'll direct them to you. But I think when maybe we first started, that would have been harder to do because without being able to accept that you don't know everything because you're once again trying to stay so far away from your imposter syndrome so strong that instead of doing that, you try to prove that you know everything and it keeps you from actually being rooted in what you know and actually helping people in the ways that you can. And so that's what I would really encourage if you're a new therapist or you're doing something new in any field is to understand that it doesn't mean something bad about you to not know everything. It's actually natural to not know everything. And the more that you can accept that you don't know, the more you're going to be able to learn and grow because it'll allow you to reach out for help.
Yeah.
Anyone else feeling like the mental load of making dinner, the planning, the shopping, the prep, figuring out the timing? It's a little heavy to carry, huh? Same. That's why I am so grateful for Hungry Root. The food quality, simple recipes, true tastiness, and delivery right to my door is truly a game changer. When getting started, you take a fun, short quiz and Hungry Root will get to know you, what you like to eat, and more. Then they'll build you a personalized cart with all your grocery needs for the week and give you delicious recipe recommendations to put those groceries to use, so you can sit back, relax, and offload the many steps of meal planning. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high-quality meat and seafood, healthy snacks, smoothies, sweets, ready meals, kids' snacks and meals, vitamins, supplements, much more. My favorite item from my latest box was the honey citrus chopped salad, lemon pepper chicken, and the four cheese tortellini. You gotta try it for yourself. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's gotta taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
A really fun fact about me that you might not know is that if I let my hair dry natural, it is a frizzball mess, which is one of the many reasons I absolutely love Prose. I truly never thought that I would be able to embrace my natural hair texture. Ever since I switched to a custom hair routine with Prose, I've noticed so many benefits. Less frizzy hair, yes, but beyond that too. My hair is shinier, healthier, and so much more manageable. Filming the podcast every week makes checking out my hair unavoidable, and I have felt so much more confident on camera thanks to Prose. Prose is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do. The custom shampoo and conditioner combo, plus the hydrating leave-in conditioner and hair oil, keeps the frizz at bay. It also makes for the smoothest blowout. People keep asking me if I got my hair cut or went to the salon, which is, of course, the highest compliment. Prose isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're certified B Corp cruelty-free and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. They even have a review and refine tool which learns from my feedback and adjusts my formula to keep up with the seasons and changes in my life. I used this feature when I moved my temporary house in New Jersey back to my house post-construction project in Pennsylvania. Environmental factors like water source is something that Prose takes into consideration with their customization. So it was very cool that I had the ability to update my location. Prose is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin, and they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at prose.com/shrinkchicks. So you get a free consultation, then 50% off at prose.com/shrinkchicks. That's prose.com/shrinkchicks.
I mean, so somebody had said, do you ever get over imposter syndrome? Is there something deeper to be addressed? Yes. One of the reasons why we want to talk about these subtypes is because you have to be able to address what's underneath it. Why do you feel like it gives you more worth if somebody validates you from work? Why do you feel like it gives you more worth if you don't have to ask for help and you're natural at something, right? So exploring, and I think it's interesting because we talked about this a lot about our episode with guilt. What morally is telling you there's something wrong here? If I don't know the answer to something and I have to ask for help, what's my fear that that's saying about me? Something that's common across all the subtypes is the idea that someone's going to figure me out. I guess the question is, are they going to figure out that we're human?
Right.
Are they going to figure out that we're complex people that don't have the answer to everything? Like, what are we so scared they're going to figure out?
We did actually talk about this in our, I think it was our guilt episode, yep. That when we look at other people or maybe our expectations of what we thought we would feel like in this role at this point is, I'm going to know everything, right? In order to help people, I have to know everything. And then when we're not measuring up to that high expectation, that actually impossible expectation that we've set for ourselves, then we feel bad. We feel like, oh, there's something wrong with me. I'm doing something wrong. As opposed to maybe we look at the expectation that we originally set for ourselves to be able to say, oh, this was actually unrealistic. I actually set this ridiculously high expectation for myself that I'm never going to meet because I'll never know everything. And it doesn't mean something about me. I wanted to mention something else that I loved, and I saw this when we were kind of doing a little bit of research, is there are two psychologists who actually coined the term imposter phenomenon. This was Pauline Rose Clance and her colleague Suzanne, sorry if I get this wrong, Ames. They coined this term imposter phenomenon because the idea that it's a syndrome makes you feel like it's a disorder in some way, where when you say phenomenon, it's everyone experiences it, right? Like this is a valid thing that everyone experiences, because I think the idea of it being a syndrome isolates you even further to feel like, once again, I'm struggling with this. No one else experiences this. No, everyone experiences this. I actually also saw that when I was looking this up, that people like Maya Angelou, Don Cheadle, all feel imposter syndrome. So you look at people who have, you know, achieved these like incredible things, who feel this intense imposter syndrome, and actually common. Imposter syndrome is way more common and particularly high among ethnic minority groups. Mm. And it often, you know, affects those who also show symptoms of depression and anxiety. So I think that's a really important thing to also acknowledge, that it's very common and really high among ethnic minority groups too.
That's fascinating.
It is.
But here's the thing. Somebody wrote in, do you think imposter syndrome is sometimes good? It keeps us from getting too cocky and know-it-all syndrome. I guess here's my concern about that, is that like, I don't think that you need imposter syndrome to not be a cocky dick. And why I say that is like, what we're actually talking about is like the vulnerability to ask for help, the vulnerability for things to take longer than we thought to learn, the vulnerability to not be the expert, the vulnerability to not be a superhuman, right? And I guess my fear is that it feels like it's almost like going to a different extreme to be like, here's your options, cocky or totally avoid it with imposter syndrome.
Right, right.
And so really what we're talking about is like, what would it be like to look and say, when does this come out? And what would it be like for me to be very honest with what's happening here?
Yeah. Someone asked us, do you ever get imposter syndrome?
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
Every Tuesday, every Thursday, I don't know.
Like, Tuesday. Tuesday specifically.
Specifically Tuesdays. Yes, I would say, you know, something we have talked about a lot is because we do so much of the managing and admin part of our business, we don't have 100% of our time to focus on learning new therapeutic skills and learning, reading new books and do all this stuff. And that is really difficult because then all of a sudden you feel like, holy shit, like if I was to just have one thing to focus on, I could be an expert in it. And like you and I are, we have a lot of knowledge with a lot of different stuff. But I would say we're specialists.
Yeah.
And it's hard because then you talk with somebody, you're like, man, I'm so far behind. This person knows all this other shit. And it really does make you feel like, well, then how can I be on this podcast telling people?
Right.
So I would say this podcast brings up a lot of imposter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting is we put up a Q&A question on our Instagram at Shrink Chicks yesterday. And one of the questions is like, what do you guys do? You know, what does a normal week look like for you? And
you didn't send this to me. What did you say?
But I answered and I was like, you know, marketing, networking, supervision, social media. What else? I said insurance. You know, sometimes we deal with legal stuff, payroll. Like the amount that we're doing is wild. And so, yeah, I think as we open up new roles, we just wear so many hats. You know, it's just impossible to feel and like, you know, 100% confident in all of those areas. I think the more we do it, the better we'll feel. The more we have been doing it, the better we have felt. But it takes time, especially when you're doing anything new, when you're entering into any new phase of life. You know, I can imagine, and you can speak to this, of like becoming a new mom. If that brought up any imposter syndrome for you.
Oh, it's really interesting. I don't know if that's what I was feeling.
Oh,
what I was feeling was, one of the things I'm pretty good at is being like, I don't know what I'm doing, right?
Right.
So like, I feel like with motherhood,
yeah,
with motherhood, I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But I think that there's this underlying something that they talk about a lot with new moms, your kids get older, is the idea of mommy wars, of like comparing the like, oh, my kid talks sooner, or my kid's walking. And it was funny because my sister-in-law had a baby 3 weeks after me. So we call them the twins, like they're cousins. They're 3 weeks apart. They've been on the complete timeline. But he's a boy. She's a girl. And it was interesting because like developmentally, there was stuff that was different. Like, I think Millie was talking sooner, but he was way more physical, walking, like going on a scooter, like all this stuff. And so like the whole time you're like sort of doing this comparison. So for me, it didn't feel like imposter syndrome. I didn't feel like I was faking it. It just felt like straight fear.
Yeah.
I'm going to damage this kid. I'm going to fuck this up. Mm. But I think for me, I wasn't pretending. Like
Right. I guess that's true.
I was just legitimately falling apart all the time.
I think it brings up a really good point of like what's underneath our imposter syndrome at times, you know, and if you were so open during that time of like, I have no idea what I'm doing, like I'm really struggling with this. And so, you know, that's one of the ways to battle imposter syndrome is to like be vulnerable and open about what you're feeling. But it brings up a really good point of like fear can be one of the things that's underneath your imposter syndrome, of fear of I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get this right. And what does this mean about me? That fear is like a really, really, I think, strong piece of it. But the way it sounds like you kept yourself from that turning into imposter syndrome is to be so open with your experience.
You know what? But it was also like, felt like different for a job, right? Like for a job, I feel like you have to keep it together, right? Because you're like, oh, I'm going to get fired, or people are going to know, or they're going to talk. Like with motherhood, I was like, what's this baby going to do? Fire
Who's
me?
She's going to fire you. Like you're out.
My kid wasn't going to be like, you want to know what? Get me another one of these. I'd like a new mother. So I had that going for me. I'll tell you the number one. Okay, Jen, I'm going to tell you exactly the number one time in our business I get the most imposter syndrome is when people ask us questions about insurance reimbursement. Do you have this too? Because I'm always like, I don't understand our insurance system. This shit makes no fucking sense. Sometimes they approve it, sometimes they don't. It's like, and then I'm like, is it because of me? It's because I don't know what I'm doing. That's the number one time.
We're also very open about that too. You know, we're very much like, no idea. We're figuring it out. That's one thing I think, you know, that we do well, I hope, that it, with our clinicians, is that if we are figuring something out, or we don't know, we very much say that to them of like, listen, we're still figuring this out.
Yeah.
This is, I think the things in which when we're like, we really don't understand this or know this, we're pretty open about that. We don't really pretend like we know what we're doing. And I think that humanizes you as a person too. You know, I'm also thinking about someone who's starting a new job, who has like a manager or someone who oversees them. And I don't think I would have known this until like being in this role of like
managing people or people coming to you. But it is so helpful as a manager to go to them and say, I don't know what I'm doing here. Can you help me? It's so helpful because then you really know and understand where they need support. Mm-hmm. Like, and as a manager, like that's your job, is to help support them so that they can do it on their own. And so if you're entering into a new job and you have someone who's like overseeing you, I think there's a lot of fear of like, oh no, they hired me. And if I admit that I don't know what I'm doing here, they're going to fire me or they're going to think they made a bad choice. But actually, it really is helpful for the person who's overseeing you or managing you to know where you need to learn more.
If you have a good manager. I mean, some people have asshole fucking managers.
That's true. Right. I'm just assuming.
Like, I know, right? And like, let's assume people are good people, but like something that just come up is like, there are people that will hold it against you. So I feel like you have to sort of say is like, is it safe for me to be vulnerable? We've talked about this before. Point. Like, you know, as therapists, we're like vulnerability. Sometimes people will use that shit against you. So you do have to have the ability to sort of say like, is this a safe place to do that?
That's a good point.
And maybe if it's not your manager, maybe it's a peer. Hey, I'm new. I just started. Could you, you know, the one time, we just switched payroll companies. The first time we ran payroll, they were like, all right, we'll just do a Zoom with you during it.
I said to them, I was like, listen, there's a chance I have a panic attack during the first time that we run payroll. That's what I mean is like, we're very open about when we don't understand something or it gives us anxiety. I literally said to this person who I don't know at all, I said, there's a chance I might have a panic attack while we do this. It ended up being fine. I did not have a panic attack.
But even that Friday after the first paychecks went in, I texted Amy, one of our therapists, and was like, did your paychecks go in? Yeah, like I was so worried that for some reason people wouldn't get paid. We never used this system before. I'm like texting people like, you got paid, right?
Right. I mean, it's like, it's trial and error. And like, as human beings, we got to figure things out too. And I think when you look to someone, you know, who's in like a managerial role, you just assume, oh, they know what they're doing. They have it all together too.
Yeah.
But we also got to figure shit out, you know? So yeah, but I love what you said, Em, about, because you don't want to assume that people who are higher ups are
good, helpful managers.
Yeah, good and helpful and like have the best intentions to want to help you. And I think it is important to look for like, are there peers I can look to? Are there other people or maybe have been in similar positions that I can look to that actually feel safe for me?
Yeah.
Did you know that billions of plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles end up in landfills every year? I used to contribute to that waste, constantly buying single-use plastic cleaning products without giving it much thought. But then I discovered Blue Land, and it has been a game changer. Blue Land has helped me eliminate the need for single-use plastic and the products I reach for the most. They are reinventing cleaning essentials. Their approach is simple yet revolutionary. Refillable cleaning products with a sleek design that not only looks great on your counter, but also reduces plastic waste significantly. What I love most is the convenience. With Blue Land, I never worry about running out of cleaning supplies or lugging bulky bottles from the store. From hand soap to toilet bowl cleaner to laundry tablets that each smell incredible, all Blue Land products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. I was blown away when I received my first Blue Land order. I immediately filled the bottles with water and their tablets, which was so easy to try everything out. And the ingredients are clean, the scents are refreshing, and the packaging is just so cute. Blue Land is trusted in over 1 million homes, including mine. If you're ready to make a positive change for the planet without sacrificing cleanliness or convenience, Blue Land has you covered. Blue Land has a special offer for our listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off. I am thrilled that the weather is finally warming up here in Philly. I went to switch out my closet the other day from my fall winter wear to my spring summer wear and noticed that I very much needed a refresh. So thank goodness for Quince that allows me to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Now I have a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I refresh my closet with the high-waisted linen shorts that come in multiple colors and patterns, the comfiest cotton tees, and my latest favorite, the smocked mini dress. And don't miss out on their accessories. Quince has the coolest sunglasses and 14 karat gold jewelry to complete any look. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
I remember after Millie was born, so it was before 2020, so like virtual thing wasn't, like virtual work wasn't super common, especially for my husband's industry. He had to go back to work 2 days after she was born. He had started that job, like he like didn't have PTO yet. It was like a new job. And so I was like, not okay. And so I was like, can you please just ask them if you can work from home? Like, I am freaking out. I'm so scared about being left alone with this baby. I'm so scared about you leaving. And he emailed his boss and his boss goes, we all had to do it. She'll be fine.
I never heard that.
Mm-hmm. And then she said, oh, well, when my wife had two newborns, I had to travel for work the whole time. She just came and stayed in the hotel. I didn't tell you this.
No. Oh.
Which is probably why 6 months later, I was like, quit the job.
My husband no longer works there.
And they were not great. But that's why part of me is like, you know, you have to know like who you work for. Like some company cultures don't give a shit that you want to learn and you want to try hard.
They want you to fake it. Oof, God, hurts my soul.
I know. Okay. A lot of people had questions about work and boundaries.
Yeah.
So I know it's not necessarily with imposter syndrome, but we still want to answer these because there were so many questions around it. So a lot of people is mainly, so here's a bunch of the different things. How the heck do I actually take my lunch break and convince people to leave me alone? How do I set boundaries in a very small office environment? How does someone in a helping profession set realistic boundaries? How to get everyone on the same page about no work emails on their phone?
This is like has changed from imposter syndrome to boundaries at work.
Like, please, God, help us get out of this, right? What to do when a workplace encourages boundaries and then completely violates them? Mm-hmm. No one takes me seriously at work because I'm female. So this is like very interesting. Okay. The best boundaries are direct boundaries that are kind boundaries, right? So let's talk about what that means. Thank you for... You know what? I know that it's a lunchtime and lots of people going around. This time is really important for me. I'm going to take my lunch hour and then I will come and find you as soon as I'm back. Right? So you don't just set it. You set it and then you also say the check-in time.
Yes.
And you also, I would recommend wearing headphones. And if you have to go out to your car, you go out to your car. I know that doesn't sound ideal. Why am I sitting in my car to eat my lunch? But who gives a shit if it gets the job done?
Right. It creates a physical boundary for you to be able. We even do that with each other where like if we're on the phone with each other and one of us has like a bunch of meetings and the other one doesn't, and we're just like talking about nothing, which will happen sometimes, or we'll just be on the phone. And Emily will be like, okay, I just got to like eat my lunch and like sit down in silence for a second.
Yeah.
And then I'll do the same thing. Like I have to like eat and And so I think that creating, you know, that level of communication with like everyone who you work closely with is really important. And it's an important thing to be able to infuse, I think, from the beginning when you first, you know, start somewhere. And if you haven't, then obviously start to infuse it, you know, now that you're realizing that that's really important to you.
I think you could also directly say, hey, I listened to a podcast about workplace boundaries. I am starting to implement this. So just so you know, from 12 to 1, I'm not going to be available.
Yes. And I think you could say, listen, it really helps me reengage with the work when I have this break. I need this break so bad so that I can be reinvested in the work, because I realize when I don't have it, the rest of my day, I am completely disengaged. And so I'm really trying to create this 1 hour boundary for myself so that I can hear what you're saying. I can be engaged with what you're saying and we can actually get some things done after this.
I think it's also one of the things you have to keep in mind is for a lot of folks, specifically women, the fear is that I'm a bitch.
Mm.
The fear is if I say that, all my coworkers are then going to go into the lunchroom and talk about how I'm a bitch. Okay. I guess right? You're going to have to be okay with being called a bitch. I mean, if that's the worst fucking thing, this is what I think about people. If I have two roads, one is I'm called a bitch. Two is the other one is that I'm totally fucking burnt out. I get home and I freak out at my partner or my dog because I'm so overstimulated. I would rather be a fucking bitch, man.
Choose the bitch road.
Right? I think that is for so many of us. That is our fear. I'm going to be called this. Okay, so what if you are?
Right.
What if that's how people think? Okay, so then this is people's fear. People won't want to hang out with me. I won't get promotions. Okay. It's true. Maybe you'll get invited to less happy hours. Possible. Would that be okay? Does that say anything about you or about them?
I think it also falls under the assumption that, like, if you set a boundary for yourself, that the automatic, right? I think that's what this idea is also what keeps people from setting boundaries is, if I set a boundary, it means that people will call me a bitch. And like, yeah, so you go down that road that like, okay, if people call you a bitch, you know, it's better than you being resentful. And at the same time, why would that mean for you that other people are going to call you a bitch, you setting a boundary and really taking care of yourself?
Yeah. But I mean, I think in our culture, people do act like that.
Yeah.
They're like, it's so horrible to set boundaries, you know?
And I think what it means is, what is that bringing up for them, for someone, right? Is it bringing up a sense of rejection? And I think that's a really strong one, is that when you say, hey, you know, I can't talk about this right now. I need to take this hour for myself. We can talk about it after lunch. What is it bringing up for them? Is it a sense of, oh, I feel rejected by this person. I feel shut down by this person, right? And typically, the reason why that's being brought up is that is something that's an introjected emotion for them that has been really embedded in their wounded emotional system for a really long time.
Yeah.
And that's what's being triggered for them. And I think the key there is that it's not your responsibility to take care of that wound for them. And you can feel that on other people. You can feel when they might be really wounded by you setting a boundary.
Yes.
But once again, that is about them. And it might mean that the way in which they react to that wound is to talk shit about you because it makes them feel better and more connected to other people. That's when you have to say, like, this is not my responsibility. And them doing this is not really about me.
Yeah.
Could it cause repercussions in other ways? Absolutely. But how, you know, what? The more important thing is for you to be able to take care of yourself. And so I think we're also talking about, like, how do you navigate a workplace that maybe doesn't really feel safe to set those boundaries? And like, what does that look like for you?
You know, I think about something we talked about before, which is stroke, kick, right?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for inviting me out to lunch. I hope you continue to invite me. And for today, I'm going to stay here and get some quiet time to ground myself before we start our afternoon activities. Stroke, and a kick. Right?
That is so important because you are saying something nice. You're saying something that's kind, inviting, and also setting a boundary for yourself, that it doesn't have to be one or the other. All right, what else we got? Dealer's choice.
All right. Okay. One last one. And then we have to get Dear Gem and Ed. Okay. Let's talk about this one just for a second. Let's end on one thing about imposter syndrome. Okay. Having a job you're actually underqualified for. Proving that you're enough. What if you do get a job and you are legitimately underqualified for it?
Okay,
I like the person admitting that.
Me too.
Right? Yeah, man.
Here's what I would say. Learn as much as you can.
Yes.
Right? You know, like, rise to the occasion.
Listen.
You know, listen and learn from other people. That it's incredible that you are even able to say that, because I think that a lot of people would be like, oh, I'm qualified for this. And they would just shove down all of that imposter syndrome that would really keep them from learning and opening up. I think it's okay to get a job that you're underqualified for, as long as you're open to learning on the job. I think learning on the job is, like, sometimes the most learning that you get, that, like, reading something in a book, you know, it can be helpful. But when you're actually applying it, you know, it's completely different. And so for you to say, I want to learn from people who I can tell really know what they're doing, that will open you up to actually learning and to feeling more qualified for the job.
All right, Dear Em and Jen.
Let's do it. I'm going to read it. I got you. I got you, girl.
Oh, why? My voice doesn't sound.
No, I just. Why? You know, I'm impressed by how much you're talking.
I feel like I can really pull it together.
You really can. Do you have a fever today? There's been so many episodes where you have legitimately had a fever.
I know, but you and I experience fevers very differently.
Yeah, that's true.
If you have a fever, you can't do anything. I'll have like 103 and I'm like, there we're rocking.
It's shocking.
I'm telling you, my mom thinks I have some autoimmune specifically for Jewish people that, I don't know, gives you fevers a lot. I can't remember what it is. If someone has it, please let me know what I should do.
I don't have that. I mean, I'm getting fevers. I am out.
Yeah. No, I'm like still trucking along. But I think that's also part of being a mom.
Yeah, you just do it. I'm impressed with you.
Yes.
Okay. Dear Em and Jen, how do I work through intrusive thoughts as a new mom? Anytime my husband or mom go to check on my 11-week-old when sleeping, I wait for the scream that something is wrong. It's exhausting.
Okay. So first thought, one, there's a great book. Good Moms Have Scary Thoughts. It's amazing. It's very good. Get the book. Okay. Two, it's been 11 weeks. You're still in what we call the fourth trimester. You just had a baby. Your nervous system is fucked up. Your hormones are fucked up. Your response is completely normal. But you're right. It's exhausting. This will get easier. But the question is, right, what are you worried they're going to scream about? Because you're having an intrusive thought. Is it the baby's not breathing? Is it they dropped the baby? Like, I would really try to, like think about yourself, like, what it is. You're also still at a time where people are talking about SIDS, which is, like, the scariest thing I could ever imagine for a parent to go through. And so you're going to have to really work on de-escalating yourself. So maybe that means someone goes in to check the baby and you say to yourself, okay, during this time, I'm going to take some deep breaths. I'm going to put my feet on the floor. I'm going to have a glass of water. And I'm going to be aware and register that right now I'm activated and heightened. And then I'm going to talk my nervous system down. Because typically they're going to walk in and say, oh, she had the bottle. She went back down. Oh, he had a burp. He went back down. Ah, change of a diaper. Easy peasy, right? And so the more that that happens, the easier it's going to feel. But also in general, as your kid gets older, I mean, I've talked about this before. After I had my daughter, I was scared to walk down steps with her. Like, I had such an intrusive thought. We have an open staircase. And I was so sure she was going to fall off. So fucking sure. So I would freak out when my husband wouldn't be home because it would be hard for me to go up and down the stairs because it was so anxiety producing for me. I felt very trapped in one room.
Oof.
That is unfortunately very normal. 98% of women report that they had intrusive thoughts postpartum. And that does not mean that they even have postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety or postpartum psychosis or any of those things. That's how common it is. It is completely normal. Part of this is like the hormonal imbalance that comes with after having a child. So know that it's normal. Talk yourself through it. Give yourself a system and a routine for when someone else checks on them and know that this will get better. But also check out this book. It's really phenomenal. We'll link it in the show notes.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode of Shrink Chicks.
We'll see you back here next Monday for another session.
In the meantime, if you want a question answered or a topic discussed, follow us on Instagram at Shrink Chicks. And if you're looking to get connected with a therapist like us to start or continue your therapeutic journey, visit thetherapygroup.com. Just fill out a contact form on our website and we will personally match you with one of our amazing therapists.
Also, if you'd be so kind, we'd love a rating review and for you to share with a friend or an enemy or a mother-in-law. Honestly, whoever needs it, so that we can keep reaching more people on our mission to bring mental health topics to your ears every week.
Thanks for being here with us. And don't forget to grow yourself. You got to know yourself.
Welcome to Raw Beauty Talks. I'm your host, Erin Treloar. Ready to peer behind the highlight reel and all those polished pictures of the world's biggest influencers and wellness experts? We're going to uncover what beauty, health, and wellness truly means in today's world. Warning though, there will be no surface level conversations here. As someone who really struggled with disordered eating and negative body image, after trying to check all those be healthy boxes, I became a health coach because I'm passionate about redefining health and wellness so that it's less about the weight on the scale and more about how we feel. I truly believe how you feel on the inside reflects out into every aspect of your life. So if you're ready to go below skin deep to tap into a whole other level of wellness, you're in the right place. Let's pull back the curtain for some raw beauty talks.